Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Welcome back to the Early Morning Sunday Show, and this is our last slot for this morning, and it is our Conscious Consumer with Mufti Muhammad Hafiji from the Economics and Finance Desk at the Jamaatul Ulama South Africa. Mufti, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, Apanisha, and all the listeners of Radio Islam International.
Well, it's been a long week for me. I've been on leave, but alhamdulillah, it's good to be back on the Sunday morning. And one of the things that I enjoy on the Sunday morning is obviously your slot, because I learn so much. And I must say that I attended a ladies' event yesterday, and I received a lot of very positive feedback with regards to the slot. So jazakallah khair for all the effort that you put into this to teach us, the listeners out here and myself, all these very interesting things that we should know and that are so beneficial to us as consumers in the world today.
Alhamdulillah. I don't think I can take all the credit. It's a joint initiative. It's a joint collaboration in how we produce the program. So it's not on myself only. And I do hope that our consumers benefit to the maximum. Indeed, it is also a learning journey for myself as we discover and pick the specific topics that we discuss on the show this morning.
Shukran. All right, let's start. And if we're talking about the motor industry associations that our consumers or people like us that are always looking out for cars and parts and that kind of thing, what are these associations that we should be looking out for?
Now, but the thing is, most people are familiar with the star grading system when it comes to accommodation. You know, so when it comes to making a booking of some sort, going out for the day or for a few days, that grading system most of us are familiar with. And I don't think it would be a misrepresentation to state that that grading is basically a guide in terms of the kind of quality or service level that one would expect from an establishment. So for a change now, we're seeing the same kind of grading coming into the motor industry, where if you're taking your motor vehicle to some service outlet and you need some work done on the motor vehicle, there is now a grading system being rolled out towards these in this particular industry and for workshops specifically. I know it can be a very frustrating exercise with a motor vehicle having to see to some things. You know, many times you find that the service level is not what you expect, and a grading would help to a great extent in terms of a basic level of service that one would expect from a particular workshop. So we now have the Motor Industry Workshop Association that has formulated a grading system and is rolling it out to various workshops countrywide. It's part of the Motor Industry Workshop Association is part of the RMI, the Retail Motor Industry. And this is now basically a body which ensures that there's a basic level of service that these workshops will provide to consumers. So in terms of pricing, for example, maybe the service level, the workmanship, and what stands out for me in terms of this grading council is that if a particular workshop is accredited by this council, there would be recourse for ordinary consumers in the event of service not being up to standard. So you have some kind of fallback or recourse if you are not satisfied with the service that you receive or any particular matter regarding the overall experience. It can be brought up through this particular association. So if you are looking for a workshop that is part of the Motor Industry Workshop Association, one could visit their website, quite an interactive, very helpful website. It's www.miwa. Motor Industry Workshop Association, miwa.org.za. So that website is indeed very helpful, and I'll go through the web details one more time. It's www.miwa.org.za.
Okay, that's quite a good one. I think it's about time that we looked at the motor industry, and I think it brings about some sort of standardization. Allowing for good service coming from that particular category of work as well.
Yes. I think when it comes to if you look at the halal industry, when the more consumers inquire about whether an establishment is halal approved, you find that the establishment is driven towards acting in a specific way. So the very same kind of thing happens when in the accommodation industry. And now you have with the motor industry, if the more consumers inquire about service providers and the kind of affiliation they have, you find that they are forced to act and embrace these kind of services, which are ultimately to the benefit of ordinary consumers.
If there's one thing about the motor industry that I've noticed is that there are very few females who get into this industry, and I think we need more of them so that we're not taken for a ride by the men who actually dominate this industry and not always willing to share the knowledge with us. So we women are always at a disadvantage when it comes to the motor industry.
Yes, definitely. I think it's worthy of consideration. What you find is many a time women are at the front desks and so forth, you know, managing the overall signing in of a motor vehicle or something of that sort.
Yes.
But there is a gradual process where some are being incorporated in a specific context to be empowered in a specific industry.
Inshallah, we'll probably see more of that. I mean, I've seen a woman who's now a panel beater, having worked in that sort of industry, you know, and learned the trade, and she's now got her own business. So there will be change as time goes on, inshallah.
Inshallah, definitely. I think now I just want to suffice on saying that having something like the Motor Industry Workshop Association is a basic guide for women who don't have someone to speak to in this particular regard, you know. So at least some place where there's a higher authority that provides a service that guides you towards signing up or utilizing a service provider that will meet your standard and will not, at the very minimum, not help you off it.
Absolutely. I think that's very important. And for women listening into the program, there's something that if you are somebody who looks after your own car and don't have much knowledge, I think a lot of us women are in that boat. Some of us have very basic understanding of how the car works and what, you know, what should be done should something happen. This is a very good opportunity for you to learn a little bit more and maybe even ask questions, as Mufti's very nicely, you know, checked out the site and given us a download on it, if I can say that, and with regards to the fact that it's also very user-friendly, so inshallah that's an option for us to maybe make do or use in the future. Well, let's see, now we're looking at managing money as a family. I think that's also very important. So tell us about what you've got for us today, what information we have at hand.
You know, if you look at our lives, right, we do so much together as a family. You know, we live together, we stay in the same residence, and we attend maybe the same institution together. Everything happens in day-to-day life as a family. But many a time you find that the specific area which is not done as a family is the aspect of financial management and banking specifically. What many of us don't realize is that banking institutions provide very tailor-made or customized benefits for family banking. So if you do your banking as a family, there are specific benefits that can accrue and can be derived. So it's worth exploring. If you have a family unit of, say, maybe five or six individuals, and you inquire from your bank that you choose regarding their offering for family banking, you'll be surprised how much of opportunity there can be to maximize benefit and gain from the overall experience. So I think for today, let me just suffice on saying that there are about at least three or four things I can talk about just to highlight the kind of benefits that can be derived from banking as a family. The first thing I want to say is what we don't perceive as a real benefit that can be derived is the aspect of saving on bank fees. So what normally happens is if you have individuals in a family unit, let's take one particular family unit, husband on one bank account, wife on a different bank account, maybe children on different bank accounts, and each one is paying their own kind of bank fees for transactions that are carried out on that particular account. Whereas if you adopt a family banking approach, you find that if, let's say, one particular family member is maybe a premier card holder or on a higher tier of banking in general, if you utilize family banking, what it basically means is everyone will enjoy the same kind of benefit that the one individual is entitled to by virtue of maybe their wealth position or their I don't know, maybe being a qualified professional of some sort. So they have specific benefits that accrue to them. But if you bank as a family, you find that the whole family benefits and is treated as if they are all within the same category. So you'll find maybe specific kinds of discounts that everyone is suddenly entitled to.
Mm.
And I just did a basic comparison. I found it really staggering. You can save in bank fees by up to 40% if you bank as a family. So the aspect of saving on fees is probably the one that stands out the most for me. If you have one individual who qualifies for maybe a higher tier account where there's specific benefits on fees, you'll suddenly find that everyone else within that household or family unit fits within the same category and is treated in the same way. So that's just one benefit. The second one is this whole aspect of rewards, which are permeating just about every aspect of life nowadays. And it's, the reward programs are becoming a very important buffer in tough economic times. So you'll find, let's say, example, one particular individual in the household is on a higher tier in terms of earning rewards. If you stay separate, as a separate individual units banking, then you find that the one individual being on a higher tier doesn't benefit anyone else. But if you're banking as a family, you find that, let's say, example, we know someone is on a higher tier of earning rewards. We're making some bookings, I don't know, to fly from one place to another. We do it all through that particular individual's account or mm-hmm. through that individual's profile. What it means is that the entire family is gaining from the reward because of the sum or the scale of this particular transaction. So the rewards that accrue are quite significant and can be meaningful and, as I said earlier on, an important buffer if you want to utilize those rewards elsewhere. So that's another aspect that is accrued to banking as a family. And then you have the whole issue of, and I think I just want to digress a little bit by saying that many a time we have this perception that if we're banking as a family, it's all one bank account. That is not the case. What will happen is the bank accounts will still be separate. They will be linked, maybe. They'll use a word like a linked account. But it doesn't mean that it's one common pot. It doesn't necessarily mean that. It just means that in terms of the overall benefits, everyone is treated the same. But the privacy of each bank account is still maintained. So if you have maybe interspousal family banking, you'll find that the husband will have his own bank account and the wife will have her own bank account, and each of them can maintain their particular preference of privacy in terms of that particular bank account. And then you find the third aspect is the issue of your children's money, you know, because if you adopt family banking, you have access to your children's account in terms of being able to view their maybe their balance and so forth. You can have access to that account. The individual child can have maybe a bank card that can be used for transactions in the event of some need of some sort. And keep in mind, many banks nowadays provide free banking for children up to the age of 18. So that's the third benefit which accrues from family banking. And then some banks are now coming on to the whole aspect of providing services where customers of the bank can save on telecommunication costs. So if you just look out carefully, you'll find some of the banks are now providing SIM cards for qualifying bank accounts. Those SIM cards come with very interesting benefits in terms of maybe data or talk time or whatever it is. But if you're banking as a family, you'll find that everyone is entitled to those benefits just by virtue of one of the family members having a qualifying bank account. So I don't think it's far-fetched to say that in South Africa specifically, data costs are exceptionally high. And if you can adopt family banking as a way to tackle this particular problem, it may be something worth considering.
Absolutely. I know I've got my daughter's bank account linked to my bank account. And the good thing about that is that it's easy to do transactions because it's just one bank to the other. So it's quick. You don't have that waiting period sometimes that happens, you know, from one bank to another. It's just also very convenient, and like you said, you save on the fees and the data cost, because they do offer you different options with regards to that as well, depending on the bank you're with. And there are quite a few benefits that can be derived from that, having, you know, sharing the same bank, and especially when you have children who are at college, away from home, that kind of thing. It does really come in very handy. So that's also a very, very important one as well. Well, let's look at the third one quickly, and that's the handy application for wannabe entrepreneurs.
Yes, you know, starting out a new business is for me, it's a pet topic. I believe that in the South African context, being self-employed is probably one of the greatest blessings one can enjoy. One on a personal level, you know, the personal privileges that come with having your own business or being self-employed. The other is the contribution to the overall economy, which is what will drive growth in terms of the South African context. I think before I come to that aspect, what I prefer to discuss for today is the whole aspect of this new application, which has been developed after much research and investment of time and money in terms of guiding small businesses to grow and develop. You know, in business, basically, there are four basic stages in theory for the business itself. One is the stage of incubation, where a basic research, market research is carried out and so forth. So you have the incubation phase, and then you have the startup phase, where you're starting up and you're establishing the business and starting to move on, and it's actually now trading, you know. And then the third stage is running the business and making sure things are effective, managing VAT, tax, everything else, you know, advertising. And then the fourth stage is usually the growth stage. Now, these are in theory the four stages of business, but I think why I'm providing it is just to understand that many ordinary small Muslim businesses often get stuck at one of these stages. Many of them mm-hmm. just the running stage. So you pass through the first three stages without actually growing the business, you know. There's nothing wrong with that, because many individuals just want to survive and just exist, and they just carry on, and not there isn't really the ambition to grow and manage a large enterprise of some sort. But in terms of transitioning between these phases, you often need an aid. You need someone to help you doing this thing, you know, because it's not easy. Many of us are not trained, and you're learning on the job. So for the first time now, we have an application that is geared towards guiding entrepreneurs towards learning these phases and managing the overall business. So First National Bank has launched this application called Fundaba, which is an app-based application that comprises of multimedia content like videos, podcasts, quizzes, basic templates that are relevant for running a business, other handy tools which are geared towards running an ordinary day-to-day business operation. So the application comprises of 12 modules across the four life cycles that I discussed earlier on. And what is very interesting about this application by First National Bank is that as a user, you can download the application for free, basically from the banking app, and you can share the content as you feel appropriate, and you can even provide feedback in terms of the overall quality or message of the content within the application. So it's a basic application. If you don't have anyone to speak to, here's an application that can guide you and provide some of the basic insight in terms of running a business. You know, keeping records, advertising,
yes.
Getting out to market, basic things are touched on within the ordinary life cycle of a small business. So this is something that is freely available to consumers, obviously within their banking application. You've got to download the specific feature. But it's called Fundaba, and it's something that makes for my particular interest.
Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting. I've seen the adverts for it, and I haven't looked at it, but it would be nice to check it out and see how it works. And like you said, I've noticed that First National Bank has a lot of very interesting little videos and bits of information that they share with their clients, which makes it so much easier to be able to use their banking services. It also teaches at the same time. So for people who are new, basically, to this whole online concept, as they go along, especially older people, they tend to enjoy, learning from these little bits of information that comes about on the app.
Yes, definitely. I think what many of us overlook as ordinary consumers or economic units is that the amount of time and research that has gone into these kind of projects, it's amazing, mm-hmm. really. So it's tried and tested content that is being shared. So if you don't have the financial resources to pay a consultant to guide you in running a business, this is something worth considering, because these projects are already heavily invested in by financial institutions and institutions that have clout. So the research is there, the content is well packaged, and it's already in a format that it's deliverable, and it's something that you don't really have to reach out too far to access. So it's definitely worth considering.
Yeah. All right. So, and then our last one is mission creep. What is mission creep, and how does it affect consumers?
Now, to unpack what the definition of mission creep is, let me just use an example to make my point, right? In South Africa, many South Africans subscribe to insurance in some form or the other, right? Let's just suffice on basic motor vehicle insurance, right? I don't think many consumers are aware of the fact that insurance data, claim data, is shared across the different insurers. So one might think that I'm with a particular insurer, and my data is with them. I claimed in my life cycle of subscribing or using this particular service provider, I've claimed maybe say, 3 or 4 times. Obviously, that each time you claim, it affects the pricing of your risk, basically, as an individual consumer. So one might think that if I change my insurer and go somewhere else, I might get a better deal. Now, this is not necessarily the case. Now, because of the whole aspect of insurers sharing claim data regarding ordinary consumers, irrespective of where you go as a consumer, your pricing will still be customized to yourself. In other words, how they calculate what is due from you each month, it will not differ, irrespective of whether you stay with one insurer for your entire lifetime or you move to another. This is purely because of insurance data or claim data being shared across the various providers. Many, many consumers are not aware of this fact, and there are disastrous consequences, or let me say disastrous consequences, I'll say it's just there are ramifications or consequences to your information, personal information being shared across the various providers. So coming to the topic now, basically, this is what mission creep is all about. They mm-hmm. they gather information with the initial motive or motivation of having to combat fraud. Because, in the insurance industry, fraud is quite prevalent, where ordinary units would maybe ordinary people would misrepresent the situation. They would inflate the situation just to claim maximum sum from the insurer. So initially they collect information with the idea of combating fraud, which is a very fair motivation mm-hmm. for why information is collected about consumers and shared across other providers. Then you find that they move into, very stealthily move into the whole idea of feeding all the information they have into artificial intelligence algorithms. Because remember, these AI technologies thrive on mm-hmm. massive quantities of data. So the more data there is, the more rich the data is, the more accurate artificial intelligence programs or tools become. So they suddenly move into wanting to use the data to refine their processes and to make it more accurate in terms of servicing the client. So that's also fine. That's also okay. But what we don't realize is that this data now, this is getting closer now to mission creep, where you find the data is used for marketing insight. And this is now giving information about how to package marketing or advertising campaigns for ordinary consumers. Now, getting closer, even more closer to mission creep, we have the whole issue of how when this data is shared across various insurance providers, you find that the entire industry suddenly becomes homogenous, and it's the same. How the industry thinks, how it treats ordinary consumers, is the same, because the same data is being shared across all of them, and how they view ordinary consumers or service the needs of ordinary consumers becomes the same. What happens with homogenous nature of industry is that the ordinary consumer doesn't benefit because there's no room for competition anymore.
Yeah.
So you'll find that over time, as an ordinary consumer, your interest is actually compromised, and you lose out because the entire industry is the same and it's treating everyone the same. And the last consequence we have is barriers to entry. So you find if everyone is the same, you have this large animal, and it doesn't allow anyone else, any smaller players, to penetrate and come in because they don't offer any unique value. So you'll find even if someone comes up and says we want to provide an Islamic alternative for this particular product, you find it will be very difficult to penetrate and come in and start out something on its own purely because of the homogenous nature of the industry. Each one is viewing the other as its own kind, and any new entrant is regarded as a threat to its existence. So you'll find this is what we have Mission Creep. This is what Mission Creep is precisely all about. Where data is collected with a very ordinary motive, and the motivation is fairly understandable. So it moves from just wanting to combat fraud, this is why we need all your information. Then you find the same data is being utilized to refine the artificial intelligence algorithms and so forth, and whatever tools are being used, we don't realize that it moves into the marketing insights. From the marketing insights, you find that the entire industry is the same. It's just viewing consumers as the same. The way it does things is the same. There's no difference. And finally, you have barriers to entry where ordinary new providers are unable to penetrate and benefit ordinary consumers.
That's very, very interesting. And every time I you know, listen to something like this or read up on something like this, it just makes me feel very afraid of the fact that I'm not sure if, you know, listeners out there will remember George Orwell's novel. And I keep going back to that. It just keeps reminding me of that. And we keep seeing this coming up every day in our lives. It's almost as if there's this conspiracy theory to standardize everything about human beings. And we're constantly under a microscope.
Yes. I think for me, what I'm concerned about is the whole issue of sharing of data. You know, for us ordinary citizens, we subscribe for a particular service thinking that this is my service provider. At no point is there ever consent taken to share information across different providers. That part is where we find that the breach of ethics is so widespread, and that's where as ordinary people we need to make ourselves heard. So if we do find that these things are happening in some way or the other, we need to equip ourselves or even clarify these aspects before signing up or agreeing to particular services. It all begins with just clarifying where do you stand.
But don't you think we've already opened ourselves up to that with regards to so much? I mean, right now, the fact that we use biometrics in a bank, that is already information that we're giving away. It's so personal. There's that, like you said, a breach of ethics, but also at the same time, the trust factor that we trust in these organizations so much.
Definitely. I can't agree more. We've already opened ourselves and revealed ourselves quite a bit. What needs to happen is when it comes to pieces of legislation, if you look at the South Korean case in 2012, how the state had to eventually step in to regulate a regulator, you know. There are pieces of legislation that will have to come out and take shape. Those pieces of legislation for us as ordinary consumers, we need to be aware of them and support those particular causes and understand what is happening or the significance of specific pieces of legislation which are geared towards protecting the information of ordinary consumers.
Okay, that's an interesting topic to speak about, inshallah, soon. But we've come to the end of today's slot, and we'll speak to you again next week and catch up with more interesting and informative advice that you have for us, inshallah.
Inshallah. Jazakallah khair for having me.
Ameen. And for you, to you as well. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.